This week on RSBNB Update, this week marks the one-year anniversary of the release of Menaphos. We have our memories and a renewed method of reputation game. Also, thoughts on Elite Dungeons, Solak bug abuse, and Jagex's winning strategy. This is RSBNB Update, episode 674, recorded Thursday, June 7th, 2018, Menaphos Memories. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for RSBNB Update. Just Tanis and myself in this week. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you, Shane.
This week marks the first birthday of Menaphos, as well as marching slowly towards another birthday of sorts, but we'll talk a little bit about that later in the podcast and provide some insight on how you guys can help us out with that. But anyways, having a good week?
You know, been a great week, right?
Yeah.
A little bit older this week.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Nice. Well, I mean, your birthday, Menaphos' birthday. So,
yeah.
On the same day, June 5th?
Yeah, well, it's 6th. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. Birthday month, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you had a happy birthday, right?
I did. Spent the entire day in the an estate museum, and I probably could have spent two more days there. It was great. Just love it.
Well, we do have another birthday on the scene here, and that is the Menaphos birthday. June 5th, 2017.
Was it June 5th?
Yeah, and then they trickled out rest of the updates throughout the month.
That's right.
Okay. And you know that? That update on its own, looking back, was interesting because it paved the way to where we are now. You know, unfinished business. And that included...
You know, you're right. I'm sorry to jump in here, Shane, but it reminds me of my wedding song, believe it or not. We did Broken Road, right?
Okay.
From Rascal Flatts. Because the moral of that story is you got to have a bunch of heartaches before you finally find the one. And that's kind of like what Jagex did with Menaphos, right? Got a whole lot of heartache. But here we are. And
yeah,
we finally found the right one.
Unfinished Business, Evil Dave's Big Day Out, Invention Batch 2, the Clue Scroll Overhaul. Those are all unfinished business. And here they are. Great updates. And, you know, I don't know if we should be celebrating the past year or if we should be celebrating Menaphos.
You know, I'm almost surprised that they are bringing that much attention to Menaphos.
Right.
Now, that being said, there were a couple good things that came out of Menaphos itself. And I was thinking about that before the show today. I'm like, you know what? If I had to sum it up, what does Menaphos mean, you know, to me? Being, you know, a higher level player, been around for a long time, what does it mean if I could boil it all down? And for me, now the opening quest I thought was just wonderfully done. I really like that the Ozon quest, you know, where you're on the flying carpet. That Jack of Spades. That was really well. I really like that quest. That and the player owned Slayer dungeon. Everything else, it just really doesn't make an impact on my gameplay, but those two things actually did. So,
yeah. And, you know, the biggest thing for me when it comes to Menaphos, I think, just looking back on it, I'll talk more about the Slayer dungeon later in the week. But the biggest thing for me would have been probably Soul Runes.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Because remember, you know, we had been waiting for Soul Runes for so long. We thought, oh, maybe the Soul Runes will come with the Elf City. No, they didn't. Maybe the Soul Runes will come with the next Elemental Workshop. No, they didn't. So we finally got them with this update. And I personally prefer the Soul Rune method of training, rune crafting over rune span as well, and that's what I did to get 99 rune crafting. So I was quite pleased with it.
And that was a new, you know, I mean, that kind of started to, that added to the runecrafting skill, right, too? Because that was a whole new mechanic to runecrafting, a whole different way of doing it.
Yeah. Recall there's also shifting tombs, which, you know, didn't really get much attention. There's also the...
got buried.
Yeah, yeah. There's also the reputation and whatnot as well. And, you know, for Jagex's part, I think they've done a good job in terms of listening to the players on this. I do think we could have seen reputation come into Pyramid Plunder, or maybe some kind of reputation-based enhancements to Pyramid Plunder, so that, say, when you reach level 5 and 10 reputation, just kind of ballparking with that, you do get an increased chance of loot from Pyramid Plunder, and that increased chance of loot is stuff that you can sell. And it would effectively make, you know, Pyramid Plunder the GP way of making money with the thieving skill. I think that would have been great.
Yeah, you know, if nothing else, you could have at least gotten reputation from the junk that you pick up in Pyramid Plunder. You know, the clay tablets and the golden cats or whatever. It's stuff that's, it's not worth anything.
Yeah.
You could have gotten reputation for that. That would have been something.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, that's enough of the past. So let's move on to what we are getting this week with this. So with the Menaphos birthday, if you log in anytime this week, you get the birthday box, and this includes a Magister teleport tablet and a free untradeable key to the crossing, so you can effectively kill the Magister once for free. You also get 20 feathers of Mat, which are good for the Corrupted Slayer dungeon, and a large Menaphite gift offering. I got a goat horn out of my Menaphite gift offering. How about you?
Absolute crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even remember what it was. It was so bad I dropped it on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was bad.
In addition to this, they are also doubling the spawn rate for Soul Obelisks and Corrupted Scarabs throughout the entire month of June until July 4th. I know lots of people are going to be happy about that. And I did do some checking when we were doing the bite this week that the channel Soul Obby is still in play, and you can use that if you need to do your reputation for Soul Obelisks. And that goes into, I think, the best part of this update, and that's the increased reputation gains for this. And, you know, if you complete Jack of Spades, your modifier for reputation gain will be 1.25, which everyone completes Jack of Spades. You complete Crocodile Tears, that becomes 1.5. You complete Our Man in the North, it goes up to 1.75. And finally, after Fight Club, it's a 2x modifier. And, you know, this is the biggest complaint about Menaphos, is that, you know, if you want to just do Fight Club, you have to go there for 13 days and do Soul Obelisks for 20k reputation a day just to be able to unlock the final quest. But no more, actually. So what I've actually done with this is I've put together a little spreadsheet. So let's just say you're starting off the Menaphos reputation at zero reputation. So what you're going to do is you get to Menaphos on your first day, right? You've done Jack of Spades. You got your 1.25x multiplier. That means that you're effectively, with this, going to get 25,000 reputation from that first Soul Obelisk. That will be enough to get you the ability to complete Crocodile Tears on day one in entering Menaphos. So now on day one in entering Menaphos, you could do both Jack of Spades and Crocodile Tears, because Crocodile Tears unlocks at 19,800 reputation. So that's not the hard one to do. So what I've done, and I'll link this in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com, is there's a list here of the quests, and then you can toggle whether or not you've completed it, and your multiplier will change. So after you complete Crocodile Tears, you have that 1.5x multiplier, and let's just say you just want to do one Soul Obelisk a day, because I think that's a fairly laid-back way of doing Menaphos if people don't want to train fishing or woodcutting there, right?
Yeah.
So that's 20,000 reputation a day, and that will bring in 30,000 reputation with that multiplier per day. So we see Crocodile Tears here. We got that. We're already at around 25,000 reputation. So let's just say we're at 25,000 reputation after day one, and we want to do Our Man in the North next, which unlocks at 99,000 reputation. So we need to get to 99,000 reputation with that. So what that means is that we need to effectively here get about, you know, 60,000, 70,000 reputation with this. So what ends up happening with this is you will only take 3 days to unlock Crocodile, or sorry, Our Man in the North now with this increased reputation rate. So 3 days in, you have already completed 3 of the 4 quests. So now let's just say your current reputation is now 99,000 or 100,000. It would be after you complete Our Man in the North. And then this puts your reputation multiplier up to 1.75 times. And our final target, 254,100, 4.4 days. So effectively 5 days after this, you get to access Fight Club. So as you can see with this here, within relatively 8 days of unlocking Menaphos now, in this time period where we now have the boosted reputation gain, actually permanently after this, you're going to be able to complete this in 8 days rather than 12 days. And I think that's a lot more palatable than what we had before.
Yeah, for sure.
And, I mean, I don't know about you, but that was the number one complaint that I heard when Menaphos was happening, is that people hated being time-gated for no absolute certain reason.
Yeah, well, and especially when it wasn't very beneficial for a lot of the players. We talked before that Menaphos is that a very specific level band that it's, you know, useful for, and to time gate people that aren't really benefiting from that, it's kind of rough.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this is where they said that they learned their lesson with this. So, I mean, makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, 35,000 reputation from a Soul Obelisk, that's pretty good per day.
Yeah, I'm actually going to try to – I've never done a Soul Obelisk, so I'm going to try to do that now. And I'm actually glad I waited on those quests because I'm going to get more out of it now.
Yeah, definitely. And you do get a bit of reputation along the way. So, I mean, when you look at it this way – what you could also do with this, if you just wanted to do the quest in one long marathon session, is you could just complete Jack of Spades and, you know, start off at no reputation and get your 25,000 and do this whole thing in 10 days. If you just wanted to do Jack of Spades, that's how long it would take with just Jack of Spades. So it should shave it off by 2 days. But yeah. I mean, and you know, the reason I say that is because Crocodile Tears is kind of standalone, but Our Man in the North and Fight Club definitely flow together into the quest. So I would recommend doing Our Man in the North and Fight Club as close in proximity to each other as you can with that. So,
okay.
But, you know, full links to this little spreadsheet here will be on the show notes at the end of this. So, I mean, 7.6 days, 8 days, if you just do Crocodile Tears and Jack of Spades on day one, and then you just go there for 8 days and get your Menaphos reputation. So there we go. And
there you go.
I think looking at it this way, it's a lot more palatable too, which is good.
So. Yeah, this is good. The funny thing is had this been the way it was in the beginning, I could actually see some players say, "Well, it's too quick. It's too easy."
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
So, yep. What do you do?
All right. Also this month with the Menaphos birthday celebrations, we have the addition of the cursed Ushabti, which is an enhanced way of getting Slayer souls. So basically what you do with this is you combine a regular Ushabti with Amisket Sand.
This was such a great idea, and it works with the, you know, the corrupted Slayer helmet with that increased chance. But damn, I don't want to fight these monsters to have to get that sand.
Yeah.
Like, could you have done anything
else? I think the easiest one is probably the camels.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even remember where they're at. They're in a really specific place, right? Like a little island
west
somewhere.
West of Sophanum or something, or east of Sophanum.
Yeah.
And these increase the chance of catching souls by 50%. And it was clarified that this means that if there's a 1% or if it was a 2% chance, you would now have a 3% chance of increasing the soul or catching the soul.
Yeah, I mean it's good regardless. You know, I mean it's catching souls can be pretty it can be rough sometimes. So
yeah, I actually caught my first soul this week.
Oh, nice! What'd you get?
Abyssal demon.
There you go.
Just
all
one.
Right.
Just one. Need many more to fill that dungeon.
Yeah, but you can put a full compliment in there, man. Just do that every day. It's good stuff. Good stuff. That's what I got. I got some abbeys down there, some dark beasts. You don't ever have to worry about a crowd ever again.
Yeah, I think that would be good to get. But I'll talk more about that later. You know, I'm a little bit torn at the moment with this because, you know, we see this here. And these updates, they make Menaphos palatable. But at the same time, I don't know if it's a good marketing strategy to release an update, the first update of June, that raises questions about last year's expansion model.
You know, I agree with that because normally the summertime, you know, the summertime for Jagex and for RuneScape players is kind of like this. You know, celebration time is where they drop a lot of the bigger stuff sometimes. And you got more people playing, people are out of school, you got more time on your hands. You know, we usually lead up to this with some kind of like a road trip or something like that. And we're not really getting that this time. So I'm thinking the heavy lifting, the big updates are going to come in the following weeks of June, that unfortunately...
Oh, yeah, it certainly looks like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with the birthdays being when it was falling when it did, I understand why they did it. But yeah, I kind of agree with you. Like, why do you draw attention to what you've actually acknowledged was kind of a mistake? You know, kind of a mess up.
Yeah. All right. One more thing on this before we move on to the patch notes. Jagex is running something called the Menaphos Pays competition, where you can win signed Menaphos concept artwork. So the idea is behind this from Mod Meadows. Mod Meadows has gone throughout the Jagex office getting as many signatures as possible on a fancy piece of A2. That's a paper size of concept art, which is actually relatively big. They're going to be giving away 5 pieces to a random bunch of people celebrating the new reputation gain. All you need is Tier 10 overall Menaphos reputation by June 25th, and you have a chance to win. Even if you already have it before today's rebalance, you will still be counted.
Cool.
And you'll be notified if your in-game win through your in-game inbox. You know, I think this is a good competition. Anyone who basically has the reputation will get it. You don't need to do anything else to gain an entry into this. So that's good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm almost there, too. I completed enough reputation to get to Fight Club, so I could, you know, take it one step further if I wanted to. I don't know if I would, but...
You know, it's a obelisk here and there. And
yeah.
Away you go, right?
All right. So before we go on to the patch notes, just a note here that the Solomon's General Store sale is happening throughout the entire month of June. Each week there's going to be a new bargain. And with this week, there are also 3 new playing card outfits, including the Twisted Gesture, the King and Queens of Spades and Diamonds outfit. So those are what's available in Solomon's Store. Remember a while back, it was every other week or so, we were having a new addition to the cosmetics in the store? Seems like that's kind of dropped off at this point.
We haven't had anything new in a long time.
Yeah.
Like, nothing really stand out, you know?
I think we're at a good level with that.
Yeah. And I think that's because a lot of the cosmetic stuff has been being just released in-game through
and that's the way it should
regular
be.
Stuff. Right.
All right, so also this week, Vic the Trader returns. And, you know, if you didn't scroll down in this news post, you would have no idea he's back in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everything is the same about Vic as last time, except this time he brings with him the Elite Trapper outfit and dwarven tools. So what are you going to go for with Vic?
Oh man, Vic's my boy. I saw him like an hour after the post. But honestly, there wasn't anything that I needed or really stood out. So, I'm going to probably be hated for this, but I actually cashed mine in for, Dunge tokens. Cause I don't have the gold accumulator and I really don't want to do floors. So
yeah, that makes sense.
That's what I did.
The new Arctic Trapper outfits are 500 credits each, whereas, some of the older outfits are more expensive at 800 for the runecrafting outfit, going down 750, 700. So it's interesting that the, newest one is the cheapest and the older, runecrafting ones are the most expensive. So there's that.
Yeah. And you can actually make those yourself.
Yeah,
which is
exactly.
Really weird.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, that's fine. I mean, some people might just have one piece they need to get and have these credits and don't know what to do. So that would be a good option to, swap out to with this. So, personally, I'll probably just convert all the bonus XP that I don't need in all my skills that I'm not training actively and I don't want the extra XP and into Herblore XP. Because, you know, Herblore is one of the most expensive skills in game. And if you can cut down the number of potions you need to make, that's all the better.
That's true.
Yeah. And, you know, I already have most of the outfits as well. And, I mean, I don't own the full artisan's outfit for crafting, but I don't have a reason to go crafting right now, you know?
So. Yeah, you know, and I think the outfits are very expensive. I don't think they're a great deal, really.
Yeah. I think most people are going to gravitate towards the protein stuff, perhaps, or the XP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and the protein stuff is, it's actually pretty good. Those aren't bad deals. The dwarven tools, that's a good item that they added, and that's a pretty good item. Yeah.
I've never used a dwarven tool. Where do we use them? What are they best used for?
I have a stack of them
in my bank.
They're best used for whipping people's asses in competition.
Because they give double XP or double items, right?
Well, yeah. What you do is you say you have the chainsaw or whatever, you can set that to get double XP, then put on a set of brawlers, woodcutting brawlers, go out in the wildy, have your friends start dropping divine magics and just watch the beating begin. It's great. It's so good.
Okay.
But you can do ram hammers for mining. You can do a vacuum for fishing. But I like the woodcutting ones. It's, I think, some of the best.
All right. Sounds good. All right. You ready for some patch notes this week?
Yeah, let's hear them.
All right. So the patch notes this week, of course, had some Solak fixes in them as well because, you know, that needed to be fixed. But we're just going to start off at the top here with some changes to skilling and, in particular, thieving here. Using an elf reset token will no longer occasionally block players from pickpocketing elves.
Yeah, that happened to me. I couldn't pickpocket Malier for a week during the thieving competition. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucked.
I wonder what caused that.
Apparently, I think it was logging. I don't know if it was logging out while it was. I don't know, but it did. I reset it, and then I reset it again, I think. And that second time, I don't know if I timed out. I almost think if you went AFK while you were pickpocketing, you were just done. But I can't tell you for sure.
All right. Grinding mud runes now works correctly if a player has a charged wicked pouch equipped. I don't know why it would not in the meantime. Yeah. Players in an even-sized dungeoneering group who do not use melee to attack a Dungeoneering boss can now receive lore book drops, as discovered by Shawnee and his new wife.
What?
Right? So players who do not use melee to attack a Dungeoneering boss, so if you're using magic or ranged, you can now receive lore book drops.
Well, that's good for the master quest capers, right?
Yeah, I mean, how long? I wonder how long this was a bug.
Yeah, wow. I wonder who knew about it.
Well, Shawnee and his wife, apparently.
Right.
All right. Moving on to Solak now. The minimum and maximum number of Reaper kills for Solak has been lowered, so they brought the entire threshold down a bit, which I think is good, you know, for the toughest boss in the game. The life points on the manifestations of Aerithor on Phase 4 of Solak's group mode in the overworld has been lowered from 45,000 to 25,000. That's effectively, you know, a chop down by almost half there. That will probably make it easier. I don't know if that seems like a lot. I mean, 25,000 life points is even a number I could probably handle, you know, all things considered with this. So I think that's a good change, probably.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to ask Dave because I'm still newbie.
Another magical mushroom has appeared near the fairy ring in the Lost Grove, which acts as a shortcut down from the hill.
Okay.
That's good. An option to exit the arena before the fight has started has been added to Solak. And, I mean, I guess that's good because otherwise you would just need to run in and potentially die if you didn't want to start the fight, though I don't know why you would be doing that. But I guess it's good to have the exit option to leave if you just want to get out, if you have the chance.
Yeah.
Solak will no longer attempt to insta-kill players who have left a previous Solak fight and entered a fresh battle. That's a pretty funny
one. I remember you.
I'm just gonna. I didn't get to kill you this time, but I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna kill you this time since I couldn't last time. Oh, weapon poison now tracks correctly when dealing the final blow to Solak's limbs. Now some changes for Menaphos here. So with this, the Grand Exchange clerks have been moved to stand with the bankers in the Menaphos Bank. Rather than across the bank, so you don't need to run back and forth. The rug merchant near Sophidim has been moved closer to the entrance. Yeah, you used to have to run basically to the river to access the rug merchant, so that's good. Erlik is now accessible via the NPC contact spell. And the following changes have been made to the agility pyramid. 200 Menaphos reputation is awarded per pyramid top handed into Simon Templeton. So there's another way of gaining reputation there. That would go up to 400 if you had completed Fight Club. Handing in more than one pyramid top to Simon Templeton without elite desert achievements completed will now award the correct amount of coins. And handing in pyramid tops to Simon Templeton with the elite desert achievements outfit completed will now give 10,000 coins per top. So, I mean, you do 10 agility pyramids, that's 100K. And when you think about it, the agility pyramid is a mid-level training method for agility, so that's some pretty good GP.
Yeah, it is.
Oh. And, you know, as I reiterated at the top, it would have been a good idea to see this in Pyramid Plunder. It's just a shame we didn't get there at this point. So. A shortcut has been added to, or shortcut icon has been added to the east wall of Sophanim. And you know, that shortcut already did exist. That's how you, get to the, camel warriors and whatnot out there. So following that, the water fountain Menaphos leading to the soul altar now correctly displays a water source icon. It did not before. And the corrupt slayer helmet will now provide a 5% bonus chance to catching souls and has the option to view the slayer codex.
That's great. I mean, it's really, really nice. And it didn't have hardly anything for, you know, for the price of the upgrade. So I'm glad we got something out of it now.
Yeah, and, you know, I have a question for this. And I don't know, you do Slayer often, or you did it at one point. Is it worth using the Corrupted Slayer helmet?
Yeah, I mean, it's... it's almost always worth using a helmet. You know what I mean? Using the Slayer helmet, the upgraded Slayer helmet. It's a lot better now if you're going to be trying to catch souls. Because it's the accuracy boost of the upgraded Slayer helmet.
Okay, right. And it's not a hybrid piece. Okay, that's good.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I don't know, depending on what armor you're using, like, you may, like, if you're using one of the, like, the Saliske set from God of Wars 2, you might have to decide, do I want the set bonus or do I want the added accuracy from the Slayer helmet? But most of the time, I'm going to wear the Slayer helmet.
Okay. Yeah, so you'd say that's what you wear when you're doing Slayer, then?
Yeah, for sure. And the teleports are nice, you know, I mean, it's nice to have, and they've definitely improved it.
Yeah, I must have missed the memo. I remember back in the day, these used to be hybrid helmets, so I stuck away from them. Because, you know, you go hybrid, and you have and you mix that with other armor, you do take a damage penalty with that. So.
Yeah, now it's typed as,
yeah,
I think,
typeless,
all.
Yeah, typeless, all, right?
Typeless,
so that's good.
All, yeah.
Good. All right. Moving on, it's now possible to combine all four God Wars Soul Stones near the altar east of the rope exit within the God Wars dungeon to create an Omni Soul Stone, which can store all God Wars boss kill counts. That's good, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you just go down there for an afternoon, you rack up, you know, 400 kills, and there you go. You store those all up in the way, and you're good for the future. Now, I don't have any enchanted headwear in my bank, so I don't know what this means, but large amounts of summoning enchanted headgear has been removed and, if owned, replaced with the unenchanted version.
I don't know what that means either, because I don't think I have those. I did, they're buried.
Because back in the day, you used to be able to enchant your headwear with summoning, and it would store your summoning scrolls. So I'm wondering, has this been done away with entirely, or what?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Anyways, that's it for the patch notes this week. So, you know, not as light as last week, but still something that we can write home about.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Good ones.
So following from that, we're going to keep talking about Solak here just a bit, because there was this thread on Solak bug abuse, and as we were recording last week, Jagex did make the announcement that they were going to be looking into this. Their analysis period has concluded, and they are going to be looking at 252 accounts during the period that this bug was live that potentially abused this. Now, here is the general overview of this. 154 of the 252 people that defeated Solak during the time the bug was up abused the bug. 98 players did not abuse the bug. So, 154 abused the bug, 98 did not abuse the bug. Now, I'm going to read from the post here just so we get the full emphasis of what's going to go on with this. For the group of players who abused the bug, we've carefully considered conditions which resulted in players falling into our analysis list. Once we went through this list, we then considered things such as the following conditions, plus other variables in multiple game sessions where this was abused. And these are: killed Solak at least once during the period the bug was live, clicking a Steel Titan scroll or swapping to the Steel Titan familiar during the kill, or high rapid clicking of 5 minutes or more with a Titan out. So that's what they looked at to determine if this bug was potentially being abused. Now, the action that they've taken with this, they've confirmed that 98 players did not abuse their kill, and as a result, these people will have no action taken against them. But for the 154 other people who did abuse the bug, they are taking an appropriate action. And here's what they may include: removal of any Solak kills. This includes the Reaper achievement that will be lost. Removal of Solak collection log progress. Removal of any pets gained from Solak, or temporary offenses applied against their account. In this case, either a 3-day or 2-week ban. And following up at the end of the post, Mod Shani says all accounts that have had action taken on them have been contacted by us in their message center. And as always, I want to take this chance to reiterate that we take bug abuse very seriously. Okay. I'm going to just start off here by saying that something definitely had to happen to these people. And, I mean, and you might say that, oh, but you don't know if they were, you know, physically attempting to utilize the bug or not. You know, there's a way of looking at someone's mouse and keyboard movements when they play a game that will look natural, right? But if you're trying to do something, say, you know, click on a specific tree for whatnot, for example, and click it very fast in a set amount of time, you're going to just keep spam clicking that tree. And that's going to stand out as an abnormality. It's not going to look as uniform in terms of what's going on in the rest of your gameplay session. So with that being said, I think that they are going to be fairly certain of their actions, that of the people who did abuse this bug. Now, as to the action taken by Jagex, I definitely agree that remove any kills on Solak, remove the collection log process, remove pets, and on the live stream they did mention that they did also remove GP gain from selling a crossbow. So, and you know, also banning, I guess, is also good too, because that is in the rules. And I think these are temp bans, and that's fine.
Yeah, I think the action that Jagex took is fair. I would have been against a permanent ban, but the temp ban, I think it's fair. I think the only thing that like strikes me is just the number of people that allegedly abused the bug.
Yeah.
So I mean, only 98 people didn't out of 250. So that's crazy. That's more people that abused it than did it legit. That's a lot.
Yeah, and you know, these were all the people who got kills during the time the bug was active.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to look at it in a really, really absurd way, this is saying how many people will abuse a bug to get ahead in life.
Yeah, right. Apparently most of them.
Like if you do it and it just happens, you're gonna realize that something happened. And you know, if you look also at the chat that someone had, like if they say, look at this, oh, it died so quick, let's try this again. And then you realize it's a bug and you keep doing it. And then they look at the chat as well and see that's what would take you up, you know, to one level higher on this list of potential offenses here, moving you into the ban territory.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And, you know, for the people who say that this is something that didn't need to happen, I just have to say that when you are dealing with any kind of bug abuse in game, you need to have a precedent that is set. Because if you did not enforce it this time, and if you just assume that, or you assume that you didn't have a high enough confidence level to charge the people with the crime here of abusing the bug, that would set a bad precedent going forward for future bugs. So it needed to be dealt with, and it needed to be dealt with in a way that was seen as enforcing the rule that you must not abuse bugs in this game.
Yeah, I wish this would have been done in previous bug abuse incidents, but yeah, at least they're getting to it now. So I guess it's better late than never, but I would have liked to seen this. I mean, I would have liked to seen the same thing happen when people were abusing the safe spots with Vindicta what's it, Hellware? Yeah. It was a couple of bosses down there.
Yeah, and I don't know what the Vindicta case was, but, I mean, if you needed to do something that was, in effect, you know, standing on your hand and counting to 10 backwards and, you know, reciting the alphabet at the same time, then that would be bug abuse. But if it was just a safe spot that you could use, then maybe that might not be bug abuse. I don't know.
It was. It had to do with a way of kiting him and maneuvering him into different areas.
All right. Well, then
it was about being people knew what they were doing.
Yeah, and I mean, for anyone who is doubting this, just look at what they were talking about here: clicking a steel titan scroll or swapping to the steel titan familiar during the kill. If you bring in a beast of burden and your Beast of Burden is not empty, but you swapped his Steel Titan. That's going to be odd. If you swapped his Steel Titan any point in the kill, and you just have, you know, not much food on you, that's also going to be odd. And high rapid clicking of 5 minutes or more with the Titan out. That is the telltale sign right there. So
yeah, 5 minutes of clicking, that's a lot of clicking.
Yeah. No. So yeah. I'm content with the action that was taken out here, and I'm glad to see that the punishments were enforced.
Yep. So don't bug abuse, people.
All right.
Play clean.
You ready for the month ahead?
Yeah, this was a pretty interesting stream, right?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what's actually coming in June 1st, then we'll go over what was talked about in the stream. So in the month ahead posting this week, you know, we see Maud Osborne delivering this one once again. And the first thing we talk about is Elite Dungeons, the Temple of Emanishi.
Yes.
Which is the, you know, Dungeoneering came out just over 8 years ago.
Literally, it's never.
And this is a way of training Dungeoneering without going to Daemonheim, which lots of people wanted.
It's a way of training, you know, Dungeoneering by actually going into a dungeon.
Yeah.
And fighting things.
Yeah. And, you know, these dungeons are effectively what raids are in other games.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be real funny to see if this turns out to be more successful than the actual raids update that Jagex put out a number of years ago. So
it's going to depend on what kind of a player you are. I mean, I think you're still stuck if you're, you know, like the Elite PVM. You're still going to be stuck doing that in the raids. But by definition, this is, like you said, this is what a raid is supposed to be. I just don't know if the bosses will be tough enough to really intrigue the, you know, the Dave types that are really, really into it. I'm into it for the tokens.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I will
definitely
be camping it for a while.
There's also the story mode that will allow people who don't want to go for the full combat experience to take advantage of it. There's also the tier 92 power armor that's going to be coming out with this. So lots of great things with this. And it's going to be tailored for groups of 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah. The power armor sounded really cool. I was a little confused, though. I didn't understand. Like, can we augment that? Like, or is it not?
It can be augmented. And if your tier 90 power armor was augmented, the augments will stay on that.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Also this month we got the Hall of Memories, which is a new divination training method that goes into the Guthix Memorial, which is south of Piscatoris. In there, it's a 70-plus divination training method. And, you know, based on what we hear right now, this won't be a way of training divination for money. It'll be more of a known quantity in terms of the amount of XP per hour that you can get, because the wisps will stay around for a certain amount of time. And it's going to reduce the amount of running back and forth that you need to do as well. So I think it's really interesting.
It's really interesting. Like, I want this to be good, but I got this sick feeling that we're just going to have to see. I don't know.
I'm intrigued by this because, you know, it's underground and it's Guthix's memory area, and these are the memories of Guthix that he wouldn't want to share to anyone else. So it's going to be good from a lore perspective.
Yes.
But what I'm also
yes.
really interested to see with this is this, if this gives us any direction to the Elder Halls and where those might be on this world.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah, I'm really intrigued by this lore kind of aspect to it. At the same time, I'm like, this will be good for, you know, our ongoing discussion of scaling diversity and see how much this actually adds to it, if anything, you know. So,
yeah,
be cool to see.
Also, the in-game calendar, which will basically show all the events that are coming up, as well as live streams, boss masses, temporary events, news posts, treasure hunter promotions. Practically everything on the front page of the website will be made available on this event calendar, so that'll also be arriving this month. And this was a Game Jam 2017 update, so we've been waiting for this one for a long time. It's finally about ready to come out, so that's good.
Well, will these just be toggles, or are they going to dirty up our interface with another?
My idea from this is that it'll be an expansion from the game clock, so you won't be able to you won't have to have it up all the time.
Okay, cool.
So you'll be able to hide it. Great. If you don't want it, just like the clock.
Nice.
Also, the Solabots General Store sale we've talked about, so there's that. Summer special, if you guys want to purchase something that is effectively half a year of Premier Club, you get all the Premier Club options, so that might be an option considering the prices of the game are going up as well in the near future. So, looks like a good month. Two headlining updates. I'm really interested to see what the Elite Dungeons do, because there's a line here in the behind-the-scenes posting that says you won't need levels in the 90s to access the dungeon. So basically what this means is that you're going to be able to do this without, you know, tier 90 plus skills, which is good for a way of training dungeoneering, because I think we've needed that for a long, long time.
Yeah, we really have, because dungeoneering is one of the skills that you either really love it or you really hate it, and there's no in between, you know. And the problem with dungeoneering is not everyone is on the same path. So, like, dungeoneering actually can be really fun if you got, like, you know, four of your friends on Discord and you're just cutting up and having a good time. Like, it can be really fun in that regard, but say one or two of those friends, now they're 120 or now they're 200 mil, they don't really want to go dungeon, you know, and then you just end up being by yourself, or you have to go with randoms, and that sucks. It's not fun. It, you know, then you're doing sinkholes for the next, like, 3 years. Ugh. Hoping that you're going to, you know. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the month ahead Q&A, because that also happened this week, and they opened it up with a bit of a recap on Solak. We already talked about most of it, but Solak has killed 400,000 players, give or take, since release.
Ooh, you've been a busy boy. 400,000 deaths, dude.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
And I would really like to know what the numbers were on Death's Shop from this as well.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
All right. So they started off with the ninja fixes. They say these are in production. It'll hopefully be released in June. These include clan broadcasts, the skybox changes, which will be interesting for you.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, too. I was like, what are we going to get here?
Yeah, you might be able to custom tailor your skybox just for you. So
that would be cool. Or, like, yeah, and have it be static would also kind of be neat.
Yeah. Right-click spellbook swap on the various altars in-game rather than needing to go in there and choose through a menu which one you want, Lunar or Zaros or Standard. Yeah. That'd be an option. The key ring will finally be added to the tool belt after all these years.
Yeah. I still got it. I don't know what keys are on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we used to see lots of quests put their keys on there. I can't remember last time we had one put on there.
Yeah, I can't either.
Be nice to get back to that.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
All right. Now they had a bit of a Q&A session on the Guthixian memory caches and Guthix's memories, specifically about what we can expect from this update. So basically, they describe this as Guthix's own personal cache, his own memories, and things that were closest to him that he wouldn't want anyone else to hear about. It's going to be fixed time-based. Wisp will be less RNG-based than they are on the surface world. And, you know, they also point out that nothing will be chasing you around down in the chamber, so it'll be a fully safe encounter as well. So lots of people are probably happy about that. 70 divination requirement. And a little sample here of some of the rewards that you'll get with this. The ability to make more than one divine location per day, and to gain more energy when converting on the surface world.
Oh, that's nice.
And you know what that means? It's basically more money.
yeah, it's more money, but then you have to choose. Are you going to do that or use your Divine Omatic?
So. I wonder if the Divine Omatic would, because the Divine Omatic doesn't use the Rift, right? So it probably wouldn't affect that. Okay.
So you're going to have to decide, like, what? How much is that boost? Is it, you know, is it worth the time to actually make the charges?
In that case, I really want to see this update then, because as you know, I don't have a Divine-O-Matic.
Yeah. So it could be real beneficial for you.
Because I've been doing it this way since the very beginning. And, you know, if this is going to be more profitable than the Divine-O-Matic, just use this. But, yeah. But I don't know if they could do that, because that would then obsolete the Divine-O-Matic.
Well, not really. I mean, it's just you'd have to choose whether you want a little bit more time or money.
Because you don't need to weave the actual charges with the Divine-O-Matic.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, no, it makes them for you.
I'm interested in both of these updates then, let's say. I was interested more in the Elite Dungeons one, believe it or not, but I'm actually interested in both of them equally now.
Some of these rewards look pretty interesting. So that, yeah, we'll you know, the rewards and the lore. Yeah.
The memory cache will have one comp requirement and one master quest cape requirement. And they say it'll be better than normal divination training for XP, but zero money coming out.
Well, that's what we're looking for, right?
Yeah, skilling diversity. It'd be interesting to plot this one.
Yeah.
Also with this, they were asked about Fish Frenzy, and they said they have learned that Fish Frenzy is as far as they will take extreme skilling like that. And in fact, Fish Frenzy might be a little bit too hard as it is right now.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's great.
Yeah, I mean, my only concern is that you can't really chat with it. You know, if you chat, you lose your streak.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So. No, there's no chatting, but welcome to my world.
Right, because you don't see the chat box if you're focusing on the fishing spots.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the only, like, AFK for me is actually being at the keyboard. That's the only time I can talk or type to people is if I'm doing an AFK skill.
Right. And for people wondering why, we should say that Tannis uses a screen reader or a screen magnifier. So.
Yeah, say a magnifier. Yeah.
So. All right. The in-game calendar, as we said, that goes back to Game Jam 2017. They say it's effectively an expansion of the in-game clock, and it'll be basically everywhere that all JMOD events, news postings, and whatnot go. This will be coming on the updated June 18th. So based on that, I would say that this coming week we're going to see the Divination update, followed by a Ninja week, and then the last week of the month will probably be the Elite Dungeons, if I had to guess. So don't quote me.
Yeah, that's what it looks like it might be shaping up for. Yeah. I wouldn't think they'll do the Divination and Elite Dungeons back to back.
No. So. No. All right. So Elite Dungeons. We already talked about the Tier 92 Serenic and Tectonic. Or is it Tectonic?
Tectonic.
Or no, never mind. Serenic. The next one is Tectonic. I'm getting ahead of myself here. So Tier 92 power armor with this. And they said the reason they're doing this is to keep the economy balanced and to keep a skilling emphasis on these elite dungeons. And also keep old bosses relevant too, which makes sense for the Tier 90 power armor. So I'm actually coming around to this kind of release mechanic for the high-level armor. I think it's good. How about you?
I really like it. And I think this is a lot better than, I mean, I know in this specific case, it's a degrade to dust, but I like the actual, you know, getting the components from the different various levels of bosses, and especially when you can, you know, repair it or, like if you augment it, you know, you can just use your charges, like that kind of thing. So
yep,
I like it. I like it a lot, actually. I mean, it took us a long time, I think, to get here, but this seems to be the right balance, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I think when it comes down to it, if they were going to go with one method, it's a lot more engaging too for players, because you know, think of a new person leveling up. They're going to need to level up and pick up all these different pieces of armor and these different levels along the way, rather than just getting it fed to you if you have level 92 in magic. So, good.
All right. Well, and it gives the different play styles a reason to, you know, a way to profit, you know, because you're still going to have your people that are doing your Virago and your Rise of the Six and that stuff, but you're also going to have players being able to do skilling and doing these elite dungeons and being able to you know, get this new T92 armor. So I think it's cool.
Yeah. You're basically going to need Amanishi scales, and roughly 100 of them will upgrade the armor. So same procedure as before.
Mm-hmm.
Augmented pieces of armor and dyes will remain augmented when upgraded, so that's good. Now, onto the actual rewards of this here. In addition to dungeoneering tokens and dungeoneering XP, a new invention blueprint will be given, which is for enchanted notepaper, which is untradeable magic notepaper.
It's pretty cool.
And there's also a drop enhancer, which will give you a chance of getting useful base world items like ceramic scales in the actual dungeoneering temple, because the drops are going to be different than the surface world. Yeah, and you know, they're going to be rare, but at the same time, they did this to kind of cordon off the economy, so to speak.
Yeah.
And have you ever thought that if you had, let's not say unlimited, but a wider supply of magic notepaper, you would use it more?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
So this is going to be good. Now, on that same sense for the economy with this, they removed everything that we don't like in these drops here. So they removed ore, logs, herbs, plate bodies, and they replaced them with similar items that are alkable or disassemblable.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they're listening.
Right. And you know, this is effectively an experiment, I'm guessing, because they had Mod Timbo on the couch for this segment, an experiment to figure out the best way of going forward on this and, you know, bringing this towards future bosses and maybe modifying some of the other bosses in the game. So that's good, because that needs to be done.
It does. We've got to just rip that Band-Aid off. And if this is a way that they can, you know, kind of dip their toe in the water and mix metaphors here, but it's good. And I think it's good for everybody to remove those things out of the drop tables. Like it's good for skillers, but it's good for everybody. It's good for the economy as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah. A question was asked, you know, could we get the elite dungeoneering outfit from this? They said that they are working on potentially giving the ability to give out the third dungeon that comes out this year, the elite dungeoneering outfit as a reward. They don't know if they're going to do it yet, but it's something they want to do.
I hope so, because that was such a broken promotion that cost people so much money.
Yeah, that dungeoneering outfit is absurd. So, fingers crossed on that. Now, you might be interested for XP. You know, dungeoneering has been you do the dungeon, you get the XP at the end of the dungeon. Well, here, you kill something, you get the dungeoneering XP. Just like Slayer.
Yeah, now, but the only caveat to that, though, is you only get tokens for bosses, right?
I think so.
Yeah, so that, I wonder how much you actually get. You know what I mean? Because if you did a 5-man large, and you're, you know, fully prestiged up, I mean, you can walk away with 20k, maybe probably about 15k dunge tokens. So they're gonna have to drop a decent amount.
It's gonna need to be competitive. I would, you know, I'm gonna say that it's gonna give slightly less than the C6 larges at with a full group.
Yeah, I mean,
tier 92 stuff coming with it. It's gonna give less.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm cool with less. you know, that's fine because I don't have to deal with five other people or four other people. That's worth it in of itself. But I just wonder how much less, you know.
Yeah. It's going to be for, as we mentioned, one, two, or three players. They're playtesters they had in. Here's what they found. Solo takes around 30 to 60 minutes. Duos takes 20 to 40 minutes. And one of the trios they had in, they did it 7 minutes.
Okay.
But they said that was going hardcore, you know, just tanking, not really. That was effectively a rush through it, you know, just tanking in all the damage and, you know, not using the full tactics that you would normally take if you were trying to minimize damage and whatnot. So,
okay, well, that's my style, so I'm down with that.
1/3 HP and half the damage will be on all of the critters inside if you decide to go in story mode. You won't get the drops, but it'll provide the lore.
Yeah, that's good for people that's interested in the story, though. I mean, that's what we're looking at. That's what we're asking when it comes to the, you know, a suggestion for the Reaper side of things.
Yeah. And, you know, the reason for this is this does have achievements, it does have comp cape, it does have trim requirements, and it does have Master Quest cape requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So then they started talking a little bit about Elite Dungeon 2, which will be coming at the end of July. So this one is set.
Wow.
Yeah.
That fast.
Yeah. This one is set somewhere with fire. There were lava strike worms seen. So perhaps under the wilderness, maybe?
No, there were lava strike worms. Come on, guys. Maybe they're moving lava strike worms to wherever this dungeon's going to be.
The other ideas were Kethsi or underneath Brimhaven.
Well, Brimhaven makes sense, but I don't want to go to the Wildy for this stuff.
Well, I don't think they could have the entire dungeon in the wilderness. I think you might need to go into the wilderness to get to it, kind of like the King Black Dragon.
Yeah, but that's a teleport where PKers can't get you.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think, you know, putting in one of these updates that's effectively the second World of Warcraft-style raid, as some people have called it, in RuneScape would be good to force people into the wilderness.
No, I don't either. I don't think you should ever force people into PvP. I think that should be an option. You should never make people have to do that.
Yeah, yeah. The second one will award Tier 92 Tectonic Power Armor.
Woo!
That is the melee one?
No.
Okay, the magic one.
Poor Shane, he doesn't use this armor very often, does he?
Nope.
No, that's the magic. That comes from Vraugo. Okay.
Right. Oh, right, because the tier 92 magic, or, oh gosh, the tier 92 melee armor will come from the mining and smithing update.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Actually, they had that very same discussion on the stream as well as to why there was no melee one, and that's perhaps why I called it the melee one. But all right, so the tier 92 ranged one will come from the second Elite Dungeon. And the Elite Dungeon 3 will be either in November or December because they are going to work on a skilling update in between these two. So, yeah.
Maybe we'll be getting the farm.
No, this is a different team than the farm.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, some of the photos here showing the Elite Dungeon number 2. You know, we've seen the concept art before on these, but Elite Dungeon number 2, the amount of work that went into the environment on this and what you can actually see that is actually rendered by the game, because you can see the players on this, is just amazing. It really shows NXT off. And, you know, if this points to anywhere else it could be, there is a celestial dragon in one of these screenshots.
Huh. Well, and you know what else is interesting, too, was I watched the art stream a couple weeks ago on the Elite Dungeons, and a lot of these assets, they're reusing, and they're just changing a little bit. They're just kind of adding to them a little bit, but they're not, like, remaking a lot of stuff from scratch. So I thought that was really cool, too. And I mean, now we see the results.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, that's a good way of, you know, reducing development time. And actually, right, because remember we talked about, was it in Build the Backlog or Content Showcase? We talked about how Elite Dungeon 1 came around. And Elite Dungeon 1 was effectively a bottle dungeon, something that was created on spare time. And they decided to go all in with this and actually create some new assets for it. So yeah, it makes sense why they are reusing those assets.
Yep.
Okay. And Elite Dungeon number 3, as we mentioned, will potentially drop the Elite Dungeoneering outfit, as well as the chest pieces for both the Tier 92 Serenic and Tectonic sets. So we're not getting the chest pieces in these first two.
Okay.
Which is fine, I think. Okay. I mean, it sells it up as a package experience. And in some ways, you know, this is kind of the same release timeline that we were looking at last year for expansions. Expansion number 1, June. Expansion number 2, September. And expansion number 3, December. Except, you know, we're kind of shifting the months around on these. But here we are. So, these dungeons.
And we're more narrowly focused.
Focused on dungeons, dungeoneering, combat experiences, lore. I like where this is going.
Yeah, I do too.
So, we'll have to play through Elite Dungeon 1 later this month.
Yeah, I can't wait. Maybe we'll get some RSB&B groups going, huh?
Yeah, you know, I'm not normally one for dungeoneering, but this one is appealing to me.
Yeah, I think this one will be fun.
Yeah.
It's an actual kind of dungeon, and I don't think the boss is going to be, you know,
no,
one
it's
of
not
these...
going to be Telos or Veronica. Yeah, it's just going to be a boss. So that's
Yeah.
And it's going to be soloable too. That's going to be a fun thing to try as well and see, you know, how you can optimize for that.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, well, if you guys want the patch notes when they come out on Monday or a quick rundown of the week's update, you can find that on our weekly bite at youtube.com/RSBNB each and every Monday. This week's, of course, was on the Menaphos birthday celebration, so you can give that a watch at youtube.com/RSBNB. Alright, you ready for our discussion topic from Tycho?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Let's shoot. Let's see what we got here.
Earlier this year, I asked you the following question. Oh, a follow-up. All right. If you were to give a name of this year from the updates so far, their plans for the future, and from your perspective, what would it be? You answered with Jagex Learns How to Win. As we are now in the middle of the year, do you think that Jagex is following this theme, or do you see a better way to describe the year so far?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Good job. I like that. I like that, Tycho. You know, for me, I really feel like they're staying on track, they're staying focused, and it's kind of like this steady progression throughout the year. I think it still holds true. What do you think, Shane?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we just need to look. Has there been any updates that have come out this year that have needed major fixes or redesign since they were launched? And the answer to that is no. Because if you look back at the past months of RSBNB update and RuneScape in general, we had updates in January. I mean, we started off with the Stalker creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that bow got fixed, right? I don't know if it's...
Oh, yeah.
I think there was some discussion...
I mean, it still has some inherent problems that it was going to have
and,
because
you know,
of what it is, but...
There is a use case for it someone was telling me about. I think it was in the Friends chat. I don't remember what the exact use case was, but it is actually really useful somewhere. I'll have to look into that again.
And it wasn't a bad update to begin with.
Right.
Like, it wasn't bad. It wasn't like the achievements rework or something like that, you know?
Next up was the Aura Bag, which everyone loved and was in work since Game Jam and has finally arrived and has effectively made Aura management a lot simpler, so that's good. Sliske's Endgame Replayability? Okay.
<Yeah.
laughs> I mean, we just know it won't be happening again because, you know, there was a grand total of like 200 people out of the entire game who played that, and I probably know a good majority of them from Clan Quest who played that.
Yeah. But it did no harm, more importantly, you know.
The Mimic boss, take it or leave it.
Yeah, did no harm once again.
The Mining and Smithing beta, not an actual update, but once again showing where we want to go. That's good. That's very powerful.
And that was cool. It was the way you're supposed to do a beta. Finally. Yeah. Finally. I feel like they got the beta right.
The bank rework taster?
I liked it more than you guys did.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's something that could use work, but, it, you know, after a while you learn how to use it. But for someone who sees it the first time, they're going to be questioning it. So, I mean, it's not horrible, but it wasn't great. Clue Scroll Overhaul, grade A. Deep Sea Fishing, yeah. Grade A.
Yeah.
Revamp to the Skeletal Horrors, and those dropping those very early combat abilities. Once again, mid-level Slayer, good. Pieces of Hate, once again, hits the right spot.
Yeah.
Then we had the Spring Fair, which I didn't really partake much in this year, though we did have that Zoltan discussion.
Right. You're Russian.
Rebuilding Edgeville, finally.
Took long enough.
Yeah. The Return of Line Firemaking. With the pitch can.
It didn't hurt, so.
I enjoyed that update.
Yeah.
Safe Cracking, once again.
Loved it.
Yeah, and that was kind of, that was one that, you know, kept giving for numerous weeks for us here. So that was good. You Are It.
It was fun. It was
I loved
cute.
It. Yeah. 5 out of 5. Yeah. Overgrown Idols. Woodcutting.
Yeah. I mean.
So that's where we're at for the year so far in terms of updates.
It's a solid year. You know?
Yeah. And I mean, we're heading into the second half of it. You know, if we can pull this month off, we are effectively there. And the answer to the question is yes, Jagex does know how to win in this case because of one key thing that they did with these updates is that the expectations were set. And, you know, I do have some reservations going forward with the build a backlog stuff, particularly the summoning rework and the accuracy and defense rework, just because those are going to be so massive that if those are not explained properly and the players don't get to, you know, test them kind of like the same way we did with the mining and smithing beta, I think there could be potentially problems with that, with those updates when they come.
Yeah, you know, the only thing that makes me think that it's going to be okay is I honestly think in the last second, Jagex will go back from the defense accuracy rework. I don't think that's going to happen. I just really don't think that's going
to
happen.
Yeah, and I mean, if they were to do that, they would need to do another series of polls on the subject based on how they have been going so far to determine which type of accuracy and defense rework people would like if they are going to do it. And I mean, we need to realize here that they just released a boss last week that that has guaranteed max hits because – or no, not guaranteed max hits. I should restate that. You can't miss because his defense is so low and your accuracy doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I just think that's too big of a that could really turn people off. If there's one thing that we know people will not want to play, it's if you mess around with the combat too much. And that might be a bridge too far for now.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll highlight it again. It was that Five Steps to Harmony with Jagex and former article that I wrote where I went through all the various updates and how, you know, we're seeing this progress and how at this point we're effectively in the building trust stage. And if we get beyond this, Jagex will effectively be able to lead the community to where they want them so that when they say that they're going to do something absolutely absurd next year, the players are going to be with them.
Yeah.
And I mean, if they pull 2018 off, they're going to have the ability to do that. The question is, what will they do with that power? I don't know.
It's anybody's guess.
Because
really.
I still see them as in a net trust deficit after the evolution of combat and expansions last year.
Yeah, and look how long that's been. So, yeah.
I mean, just to look at what needed to be done to, you know, rather than, you know, go through the combat system and explain it and adjust it, they had to bring in legacy combat back
right.
in 2014 or 2015, whenever that was.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And maybe we also need to even, you know, maybe sometimes we should ask, like, how big of updates, how big of a game changer do we really need? Or are the updates that we've been seeing this year, is that good? Like, is that steady pace, that steady improvement, you know, good enough? Rather than having some kind of game just overhauling change with, like, combat or, you know, something else.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's only real two bigger levels that you can go from this, and that is the mining and smithing rework, mm-hmm. and an entirely new skill.
Yes.
And yeah. I think that's as far as you can go in terms of levels of update. So, and, you know, we got to a point, I also think, where updates had to be large and grand, and this was largely a product of the Sixth Age storyline, I think. Mm-hmm. But if you go back to updates of 04 and 05, they were teeny tiny, tiny updates. Like, one of the updates was the home teleport back then. And that was fine. Right.
Oh, I mean, it was probably huge for people that was around at the time, you know? No, and I think that's, I think it's good. We shouldn't always be, you know, looking for these huge precise kind of updates.
Yeah.
I think what we've got this year has been, it's really good. And it's probably cost them a lot less than what they did last year. That wasn't good. Yeah. I'm just speculating, but who knows, you know?
Like, let me just give you an example here in terms of, I think, what has fostered to that. If you go back to September 2004, you had the energy potions added as the first update, which I don't know who uses that anymore. There was also the update for the Calphite, Queen, and Plague City Part 4, or Regicide, also in September as well. So that was September of 2004. Now, if you look into October of 2004, you had Edgar's Ruse, Mauritania, Treasure Trails and Changes, and a RuneScape Classic update, a RuneScape Classic mass ban by the looks of it, back in 2004. So, I mean, if you look at all these updates, these were laying the groundwork back then when the game was still relatively new. And I think it became something that the players asked, that they want to see these kind of new things laid down, like Taibowani Trio, Plague City Part 4, and the Calphite Queen, all of that in 1 month back in 2004. But in reality, the game is a lot more mature today than it was back then, and it takes more time to build these updates. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at the same time, yes, these updates were big back then, but at the same time, I think we're in a situation where updates like this Guthix's divination training method are going to be good, as with safecracking and whatnot. So these are, I think, on the same level as the updates we saw back then, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that makes sense if you look at it that way. But yeah, and I can definitely see it. People were that was one way to get people spoiled, right?
Yeah, There's also the effect of time on this as well, because when you look back and you see the Calphite Queen and Regicide and Treasure Trails being released, you see what those have morphed into over time. And those are big updates given where we are today. And it's just natural over time that we will put that kind of lens on things. So I think that that has affected that both in the player base and at Jagex. But, you know, to bring this back to where we are today, updates like safe cracking and this divination and update that we're getting in Dungeoneering update later in the month are going to be on the same level as this probably in a number of years when we look forward to see how it's changed the skill. So,
yeah, back to back quest months. When is the last time that happened?
Oh, that'd be fun. I would love to get back to that.
Back to back quest. Wow.
Oh, and then in December was Monkey Madness.
Oh, geez. That was a big year for Quest then.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think they definitely have and learned how to win, and they need to keep on this path, and they just need to realize that when an update comes out, it needs to not only be about saying what's going to be an update, but selling the update and leading the community to have good expectations of what you're actually going to deliver.
Yeah. And we have been beating that drum for a year now on managing your expectations, knowing what to expect. Don't get too caught up in the hype. You know, some excitement's okay, but don't expect don't expect everything out of a single update.
Definitely. All right. If you guys want to send your questions in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com. You can also call or text them to 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. That is a North American number, so please do be mindful if you live outside of North America. And finally, and perhaps the easiest way, is to just send us an at mention on Twitter or DM us at RSBNB, which we also post other things on Twitter too. So either the email or the forums or Twitter, those are all good options. If you don't want a phone. Okay. You ready for tech news?
Yeah. What do we got in the tech world this week?
So this week was Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference keynote address on Monday, in which Apple announced their software changes for the next year. So we saw the release of iOS 12, or rather the announcement of iOS 12 this week. You know, it's not a huge release, as was iOS 7 changing the UI, but we see features such as Group FaceTime, Memoji if you have an iPhone 10, digital health features, a new focus on augmented reality with Apple releasing its new measuring application, which will effectively allow you to use your iPhone as a tape measure. I tried some of these third-party apps before. They're not really that great, so we'll have to see what Apple does with this. Big focus on augmented reality, specifically with Lego, that allows you to interact with actual physical Lego sets. So this is, you know, a new kind of toy. Yeah, right?
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, it does. So if you have
I gotta get my kid into Lego.
If you have a big phone or an iPad, that could be something to look at. You know, there is also some changes to photos and whatnot, but you know, you'll see those and just integrate them into your workflow when you get the new version of iOS 12. But perhaps the biggest thing and one of the most shocking things that wasn't really talked about was major updates to Siri. Instead of, you know, providing updates to Siri to allow for it to compete more on an even playing ground with Google Assistant and the Amazon one, Apple is instead introducing a Shortcuts app to allow users to create their own voice-controlled workflows. So an example of this might be... Yeah, this is their solution to fixing Siri.
Well, it's something I would have never thought of. I mean...
Yeah. Huh. So... basically, what you'll be able to do is a third-party application will be able to integrate into it. So there's a way of tracking your keys with some applications. So if you just say, I lost my keys, you can then set that up as a shortcut within this app. So when you say to Siri, I lost my keys, it will automatically open that app and find and show a map for your key, where your key location is. So that's one example they gave. Another one is that if you constantly, you know, respond with text messages to someone saying, where are you at? You can say, send a text message to this person showing where I am, and it will include the appropriate map from Apple Maps. Whereas, you know, if you think about it, a more natural thing would be to do, just say, hey, send a text message to this person where I'm at right now, and it would do it, and you wouldn't need to create this shortcut.
Yeah, I'm happy it's getting some improvements and all, though, because it does need it.
Yeah, and I mean, I would have loved to see it, the ability to integrate all this without needing to create your own shortcuts, but I mean, I guess it's the design decision that Apple has chosen in terms of keeping all the Siri processing on device and not sending it up to the cloud like the others do to listen to you. So,
you know, maybe send your boss, you know, plans for your flooring.
Yeah. Like yeah. I don't know. That'll be interesting to play with. I guess it will be good, but at the same time, kind of disappointing, I think.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. It sounded cooler than it ended up being, but I'm still happy to have some improvements because, like, it's a wonderful tool, but it does have its limitations.
Yeah, and you know, we had this kind of tool also on the Mac. It's called Automator, and it effectively allows you to automate various tasks and whatnot that you know you would find repetitive and whatnot, and you can access them based on an actual workflow. So this seems a lot like that, and I think that as much as we would like to see all this happen without any interaction on our part, I think this is what Apple has to do to maintain relevancy, because I don't know about you, but Siri just doesn't seem that powerful today.
No, not in the times of Google and Amazon.
Yeah. So that's that. Of course, we'll have more feedback on that once we get to play with it. They're also bringing in something called Screen Time, which will allow you to track the amount of time you're using your phone, good for kids and whatnot, and it'll sort by what kind of applications you use and when you use them. So that'll be interesting to see. And two very interesting things for iOS 12 that didn't get enough mention but should have been mentioned more is that they are reworking the notifications so that it will now automatically group notifications based on application on the lock screen. So if you get a bunch of text messages, you'll be able to sort through all those on their own and then move on to your emails and so on and so forth. And then you can delve deeper into the notifications and determine if you want to have that grouping continue or if you just want to have them all on the lock screen. So finer control of the notifications center as well is there. And the thing that most people aren't talking about is that they are bringing in a new feature that will allow you to disable USB access when the iPhone hasn't been unlocked for more than an hour. So it won't be able to be used to suck the data off it.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's that security feature.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
So the USB port will just act as a charging port in that case.
I see.
Yeah, they also announced macOS Mojave, which biggest feature is dark mode and a revamped desktop experience that will automatically, if you want, organize your icons on your desktop into stacks so that you won't have, you know, a bajillion icons on your desktop. If you prefer icons on your desktop, we'll intelligently sort it. They're also revamping the Mac App Store, so it'll be a lot more like the iOS App Store. And they are also bringing some changes to Finder as well to bring it in kind of line with the gallery view that we have on Windows 10. So that'll be good for people switching over from Windows to Mac. And perhaps the biggest story and the one that got the loudest applause at the event is that they are making a compelling reason to use Safari if you have a Mac. And that reason is privacy. So basically, if you go to a page in Safari in iOS 12 or macOS Mojave, it will automatically detect if there are Facebook like buttons or embedded comment fields from, you know, Discuss or Facebook, and they're attempting to utilize your sign-in data from Facebook or Twitter. And it will ask you if you want to allow that, and you will have to whitelist that website. So this is their way of effectively cutting down on this Facebook snooping. So
that's good.
Yeah,
you have to put in that login though, don't you?
Yes.
Like wherever you go.
Yes, okay. You would. But the thing is that even if there's a like button on a page, Facebook knows you went to that page if you're logged into Facebook.
Oh. All right.
Yeah. So those little innocuous like buttons that Twitter and Facebook use, they're really not so innocuous. They telegraph to the companies what pages you're on and whatnot if you have those cookies enabled. So Safari will ask you if you want to transmit that data. And the reason why this is such a groundbreaking feature is that if you look at other browsers like Chrome, you need to install an extension to do that. So this is going to be really good for Mac users and iOS users.
Yeah, I'm just beginning to just hate Facebook. I'm really someone needs to give us a new one.
If you're beginning to hate Facebook, you're gonna be in agony when we get to our last tech news story here.
Yay.
But anyways, also at the conference, we saw TVOS 12 and WatchOS 5, but I won't go too much into those. But if you want full breakdown on what Apple talked about, you can find that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. There was also one other tiny little thing with this. Now, when you look at RuneScape, it uses a technology called OpenGL to render what you see on screen. Your graphics card utilizes that library and that draws the world and whatnot that we see. There's two big ones on Windows, OpenGL and DirectX. And OpenGL is provided on iOS and macOS by Apple. And at the very bottom of the iOS 12 release notes, there is this line that says, apps built using OpenGL ES will continue to run in iOS 12, but OpenGL ES is deprecated in iOS 12. So basically what this means is that Apple is not doing any further work on OpenGL on the Mac or iOS. Now, this is a big issue for people who use Macs to play RuneScape, like myself. If OpenGL were to ever disappear, we'll be okay through Mojave. But beyond that, who knows if Apple decides to pull the plug on this. But there's also something else coming in the pipeline. Do you know what that is?
Mobile.
Exactly. And you know, iOS mobile could be potentially more than 50% of Jagex's install base, right?
Yeah. And now, let me make sure I understand this right. The OpenGL and the DirectX, that's kind of like a – is that a language structure?
Yeah, it's effectively a toolkit that lets you take the models and whatnot in environments that the artists create and bring them to life in a game.
So we're screwed if that doesn't
– Yeah, and work. I asked Jagex about this. I said, does this affect RS Mobile? And, I tweeted to Mod Ashers, and, he got back to me in a really good amount of time with this, and he said he'd ask the engine team about it. And, credit to him, he got back to me, and he said he asked the engine team. The word from Jagex as of today is they have no concerns about this affecting RS Mobile, and they might be moving over to Vulkan once mobile is out, but that's up for debate, they say. And Vulkan is another competing rendering toolkit just like OpenGL.
Okay, so if Jagex gets if we get an update for RuneScape and it has to go through, mobile's out and everything, will that be prevented in any way if the OpenGL is not being serviced, essentially?
Well, what this means is that they're effectively going to need to move their entire stack over to this new graphics toolkit.
Okay.
And, they say once mobile is out, and, as I anticipated when we heard about the mobile beta, I was anticipating an open mobile beta this fall with a launch in early 2019. So, this would effectively mean that if this does stay in iOS and does stay in Mojave, this would effectively mean that after mobile comes out next year, they would need to modify the engine of both of RuneScape to effectively move over to the Vulkan rendering engine. So, this is relatively big. This is a big deal when you consider, not so much from the Mac side of the equation, but if they get the iOS version of RuneScape out there and they need to swap the rendering toolkit in next to a year, that's going to be a huge job. So, they say after mobile comes out, so presumably there should be no delays getting mobile out, but we'll see after that.
Come on, Apple. You just don't play well with others, does it?
Yeah. Yeah, they want everyone to use Metal, which is their own. So.
Mm-hmm. I figured there had to be something like that behind all this.
But according to Ashers, there should be no impact right now, so fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's all we can do, right?
Yep. All right, so this next piece of tech news is called Who Gets to Be on the Steam Store, and this is in response to a change in policy from Steam in terms of determining what should be allowed on the Steam store, because you know, they said that they feel that many people are upset that there could be potential censorship going on regarding games. And they said that, you know, just to quote the article here, this challenge is that the problem is not simply about whether or not the Steam store should contain games with adult or violent content. Instead, it is about whether the store contains games with an entire range of controversial topics from politics, sexuality, racism, gender, violence, identity, and so on. In addition, there are controversial topics like that that are particular to games, like what even constitutes a game, or what level of quality is appropriate before something can be released. So this is the discussion that Steam had, and the decision that they took was to open up the Steam store to many more developers, and that at the end of the day, Valve should not be the one deciding this. If you're a player, we shouldn't be choosing for you what content you can or can't buy. If you're a developer, we shouldn't be choosing what content you're allowed to create. Those choices should be yours to make. Our role should be to provide systems and tools to support your efforts to make these choices for yourself, and to help you do it in a way that makes you feel comfortable. So effectively, Valve here is saying for the Steam store that there won't really be much censorship unless something is truly illegal or straight up trolling.
Yeah. You know, if you've been following this over the last few years, they've made several changes, and they've been trying to seek the right balance with this. You know, they did the green light. Was it the green light?
Yeah, I think so.
For a while, and then they changed that to somewhat of a licensing type system. Now it looks like we're going back to basically back to what we had. I think those lines that they made about people choosing what they want to play and, you know, not dictating that to people and not dictating developers how to develop, that is 100% right. My question is, though, there, and I think this is a legitimate question of what is the appropriate amount of, like, quality? Like, what will you be able
exactly
to expect? Because
there's
have
so much
been
junk on the Steam store right now, too.
Yes. See, that's what I'm wondering. Like, will we have the appropriate tools to be able to decipher if something is just complete crap? If we have that, I'm all for it. But, you know, if it's hard to know that, you make a purchase of something that is completely misrepresented, and then you have no recourse, you just lost your money. I don't think that would be right, you know?
Yeah. They really need to make sure they get this right. Because they say it means that the Steam store is going to contain something that you hate, but you don't think should exist.
And on a content level, like, I'm fine with that. You know what I mean? Like, when it comes to controversial stuff, okay. I mean, even stuff that is distasteful, I'm still okay with that. But where my, like, worry comes in is, you know, labeling something early access that is just a complete and utter piece of crap that will
right
run for 3 minutes and crash,
right,
you know?
Yeah,
that's what I'm worried
about. And I think that's another discussion as well on this. It's about quality, not necessarily the content of it and whether or not it's inappropriate. And, you know, they definitely need to do that. And, you know, I have an idea of how this could potentially work. It's a basic idea, but basically what you do is you could have a filtering system where games that are rated by the ESRB in North America and have ratings or, you know, other parts of the world, you can filter by that. And if it doesn't have a rating, it doesn't appear because, you know, if it's just like a movie. If it says it's not rated, there's probably something in there that's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, I actually like this stance because it effectively means that you don't need to be censored by someone else. And the worst part about it is when a developer put hours and hours into building a game or a tool or an application, and then they find that they can't publish it on their said store. That's just horrible. That's just horrible.
Yeah.
So I actually am a big fan of the approach that they're taking, and the reason I say this is that what they say next, it means that the games we allow into the store will not be a reflection of Valve's values beyond the simple belief that you all have the right to create and consume content as you choose. And the 2 points apply to all of us at Valve as well. If you see something on Steam that you think should not exist, it's almost certain that someone at Valve is right there with you. And that's perfect. Because this goes back to how the internet was initially founded, mm-hmm. is that everyone can have a space. The internet is, you know, a wild, wild west that you can put whatever you want on it as long as you're not being illegal.
Yeah, as long as it's not illegal, change a channel.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Click. But, Shane, you do realize what this means.
What's that?
Brace yourself. We're going to get the Porn Star Simulator finally.
Yeah, and I mean, as long as it's rated properly and I can hide that stuff from appearing in my Steam search list, that'll be fine.
Okay, because that's probably in development right now.
Oh, I don't bet it. And in VR.
Oh, so, Lord.
And, you know, I think this needs to be commanded because it's far too often you see companies, big companies like Valve, and assert their values on everyone.
Or even worse, like, you know, advertisers or something will come in and be like, oh, well, we don't like that, you know.
And exactly.
And that's always been something that drives me crazy, that people seem to be perfectly fine with corporate censorship. But, you know, if they think it's government censorship, oh, man, you know, we can't have that. But I'm like, but you're being censored by corporations.
And the same thing about boycotts, too. I hate boycotts. You know,
yeah,
they
don't
harm the company. They harm the little people that work at the company. So,
or the even if there is a little manufacturer of whatever said good. Yeah, I agree with you there.
Yeah. So this should be good. Interesting to watch and see how it develops along the way. Mm-hmm. Credit to Sirion for putting that story into the show notes for us this week.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Facebook.
I'm gonna end up deleting my profile, aren't I?
Yeah. Facebook gave device makers deep access to data on users and friends, published this past Sunday in the New York Times. So, as we all know, Facebook is the largest social networking platform out there. Facebook has data sharing partnerships with at least 60 device makers. These include North American device makers such as Apple, Amazon, BlackBerry, and Microsoft. Now, there are also device makers such as... What?
It didn't help BlackBerry very much. That's all I'm saying. They better get their money back. Sorry. Sorry.
Oh, boy. Okay, so... Now, it's not just these North American ones. There are also device makers inside China, such as Huawei and other companies that are close to the Chinese government that have these device that have access to this device data. Now, given the whole recent breach on Cambridge Analytica and the privacy information of however many millions of Facebook users, tens of millions of Facebook users were involved in that, you would think that this would be a bigger story. But it's not this week. It was determined that the data involved in these, that was given from these, given to these device makers, was so deep that they could see things such as the Facebook's users' relationship status, their religions, their political leanings, and potentially upcoming events that they were going to be going to. And there's other data, too. Now, this is, of course, going to Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, probably Google, too, when they were making the Google Pixel, but Google wasn't listed on this list. And, you know, you kind of expect that to happen with device makers. And I should also say this right now, that in Mojave and iOS 12, Apple is severing the link inside the system control panel to Twitter and Facebook. Those aren't going to be there anymore. So that's
now good. This. I have a question. Since we know that they did release this to some Chinese makers, I wonder, is CTE involved in this, who is already in trouble for spying?
I'm not sure if they appeared in this one. I'm not sure on that.
See, and this is the problem. Like, whatever your beliefs are, it's not good to let any foreign government have that kind of data on
especially on your people. Communist China.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, never mind Russia. Why would you give China all this? Like, it just doesn't seem like a real smart thing. But
let me just underscore the magnitude of this. You have one of these devices, and we're going to go back to BlackBerry as much as we laughed about that. The BlackBerry Hub app, which was made by BlackBerry, was able to retrieve detailed data on 556 people of this person's friends. Not just the individual guy who signed in, but 556 of his friends as well.
Gee, that's like everybody with a BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And that's the part that is really scary and really irritating, because
Facebook responded
to this.
You're
not even in control of your own stuff.
Facebook responded to this by saying that they cut off this type of access to third parties' data in 2015. But Facebook was bigger in 2015 than it is today in terms of the number of people who are engaging with it. Yes, they have more users today, but they're not engaging as much as they were in the past. So here's another big one about this. The BlackBerry Hub app was also to access information on 294,258 friends of this Mr. LaForgia's one case they're looking here. So not only for the friends, but also the friends of friends.
I retire.
So this is effectively an open tap that was given to these huge companies by Facebook, and who knows what they could end up doing with it.
And you would never allow your government to do that. You would never allow anyone to do this. But we've let – and here's the worst part. It's probably not a law against it. And even if there was, they would never be punished for it. And if they were, it would be such a low fine that they'd say, it's the cost of doing business.
Right. And how do you punish a Chinese device manufacturer for grabbing data of people who are in Canada and the United States? You can't.
You can't. And the people that should be punished is Facebook. You know, it's not the first time these stories keep coming out over and over again. And I really don't see how you get around it other than people have to start disengaging with it. Yeah. Or maybe a competitor will come along.
Good luck.
I know, but hey, Facebook put out MySpace, right? I mean, they did away with them.
Yeah. You know, just a word from BlackBerry here with this. Usher Lieberman, who is a BlackBerry spokesman, said in a statement that the company used Facebook data only to give its customers access to their Facebook networks and messages. And Mr. Lieberman then said that the company did not collect or mine the data, Facebook data of their customers, adding that BlackBerry has always been in the business of protecting, not monetizing customer data, which is fine. But we need to realize that everyone else had access to all of this, had access to this level of data. So
yeah, I mean, that's great for BlackBerry, but does what do you call them, Yahoo or Woo?
Huawei.
Are they that scrupulous?
Exactly.
I don't know. Maybe not.
And you know, this is bigger than Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah,
because. If you look at Cambridge Analytica, that was largely to people who installed a single app. And I think it was, 50 million Facebook users, give or take?
Yeah, which is a huge number, but a small fraction of the total – well, not a small fraction, but a fraction of the total user base.
Yeah. Oh, 87 million, sorry. with 300,000 Facebook users using the app. And when you look at what all these other companies can do instead, this is a much bigger deal. But if you didn't read the news, you wouldn't have heard about all this.
Well, it's hard when we have a certain somebody that sucks all the air out the room week after week.
Yeah, and of course the media likes covering him because of all the ratings and clicks they get too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's just disgusting the way the media is with clickbait and whatnot. You know, we used to expect that from BuzzFeed, but now you can expect it from everyone.
Yeah, well, maybe we need a nonprofit media that just gives us – can we just get a straight news show? They're not worried about clicks and likes and views, just
– maybe.
Just a fact show? Maybe. Like, can we get somebody to do that?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Anyways, it gets worse with Facebook. Facebook today announced there's also a privacy bug that affects 14 million users. And this bug meant millions of users may have unknowingly posted private information to the public. The glitch set everyone's post status, you know, where you can control whether it's private or your friends or friends of friends or public. It set a user's post to be shared with everyone, even if the user had chosen the more restrictive options available.
Yeah. Well, how you feeling about those nudes now, guys?
They said they fixed the issue and they are letting everyone know who was affected by it and asking them to review any posts made during that time. And they say, to be clear, the bug did not impact anything people had posted before, and they could still choose their audience just like they always have. This happened between May 18th and May 22nd, but it took until May 27th to switch the post back to private.
Yeah, that shouldn't happen.
14 million there. So by this number, we're already up to north of 100 million Facebook users affected by their snafus.
I wonder how many millions were just pictures of someone's lunch.
I don't know.
Probably a lot. I'm done with Facebook. I'm done. I'm done with them. I will never post anything ever again.
Yeah. Alrighty, folks, there's tech news. We started out rosy and we got more dark as we went through.
We should have flipped it. Could have left on a high note.
All right, so moving on to our crafting skill of the month. This month five competitors in this month. Currently, Sorensen 57 is in first place with 5.5 million XP gained. Second place is Pernasius with 1.5 million XP gained. And Tannis, you're in third with 311,000.
Yeah.
And didn't you say you were taking it a little bit more relaxed this month, unlike previous months?
Yeah. Well, I'm taking it relaxed, but I'm also doing it for free.
Okay.
So,
what are you doing?
A daily when I can remember it. So you always get the bag back, so you get your money back for that. And I'll set out a harp when I'm not doing my divination stuff. So. Yeah, we're doing a free crafting route, which is why I have 300K.
All right. Yeah, fair enough. All right. So, as I mentioned last week on the podcast, June is going to be a hectic month and a big month for RSBNB Update. June is also the month of our anniversary, and that's next week, but you'll hear about that next week. I'm not going to reveal what's happening for that yet. But
will you reveal how old we're going to be?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
I will. That'll be next week.
Okay.
So this week, I am proud to announce that RSBNB Update now has a Patreon account, which you can find at patreon.com/RSBNB. So you might be wondering, okay, so what's Shane going to give everyone for subscribing to RSBNB Update's Patreon at patreon.com/RSBNB? Well, it all started off back in June of 2005, and, you know, we've covered practically every RuneScape update since then, you know, from the removal of the Wilderness and EOC to the release of Prif and that sixth age quest storyline. We continue into the future with the mining and smithing beta, the elite dungeons, the Guthix divination update coming next week, And quite honestly, it's not without each and every one of the listeners here that we would have got to this position that we're at today. So before we get too far off and before we get into what's happening next week on next week's show, I'll just say thank you to everyone for the support and sharing your time on RuneScape with us, because, you know, a week doesn't go by where I don't hear from someone that they are, you know, listening to RSBNB Update as they walk, listening to RSBNB Update as they go to work, or listening to RSBNB Update while they're playing RuneScape, doing these Slayer tasks. And that's actually why the longer episodes are actually okay, north of an hour and a half. So thank you to everyone who listens to RSBNB Update. It wouldn't be the show that it is without all of you. So with this, we ask, if you enjoy RSBNB Update, to please consider dropping a couple dollars to show your support. These will be used to fund our costs, including our website, podcast storage, and our web address at update.rsbnb.com. And in return, you get our eternal gratitude, as well as some of the perks mentioned below. So, you ready for these perks?
I can't wait.
So, for $1 a month, you receive a special mention in the show notes each and every week that you're subscribed, and you have the satisfaction of knowing that you help RSBNB fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. Now, we take it up to $3 a month, and you'll get a special VIP rank on our Discord server. You'll also get a special mention on the podcast the week that you subscribe, and early access to our show notes in addition to the previous rewards. Now, for $5 a month, you receive a shout-out each and every week on the podcast that you subscribed, and exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show. So these little files that get removed in pre and post show that might make it to the clip show, we'll find a way to give access to those of you guys who subscribe for $5 a month and all the previous perks and benefits as well. Now, by supporting RSBNB Update, you allow us to take the podcast to the next level, because as we all know, ad blockers have become a thing in the recent years, and then has had a cut into the revenue that RSBNB receives. So this will allow us to take the podcast to the next level, and you're probably wondering what that next level looks like. Well, here we are. At $15 a month, if we reach that tier, we will provide a bonus show, which will effectively be a monthly bit focused around one or two hot-button issues in the RuneScape community. These will be released to Patreon supporters exclusively. For $30 a month, we will do, are you ready for this?
You ready?
A video ready? Show and record RSBNB Update with our shining faces, as well as the oh-so-elaborate sets that both Tanis and I have designed, which are truly elaborate.
Truly.
And if you ever wondered what the hosts look like, this is your chance to see us. So that's the $30 a month tier. And finally, if we reach $45 a month, we will record RSBNB Update and live stream it online, in addition to the previous video show. So there you have it, folks. That's the RSBNB Update Patreon. Can be found at patreon.com/RSBNB. And just take a moment to remind everyone that RSBNB Update will always be here, and full audio episodes will always be made available on our website at update.rsbnb.com. So we are truly honored to have you, the listener, with us on this journey. So thank you very much. And if you truly enjoy this podcast and you want to show your support, patreon.com/RSBNB.
Yeah. Thank you so much to everybody out there that listens week after week. Tell your friends, tell your other RuneScape players, clan members, just whatever. We can only do what we do because of you out there. So thank you so much. And, yeah, think about maybe, you know, if you want to support us on Patreon.
Yeah, I'm wondering what'll happen if we get to that video tier.
Well, I've been seen before. You, on the other hand, are the mystery meat.
And I'll just say that in the past, back in the early days of RSBNB, there were people who were willing to buy my photo for a white party hat. But I couldn't do that because of real-world trading.
Okay. Yeah, that would be, you know, I feel optimistic. And, you know, and the way Patreon, you know, the way it is, it's about sharing with each other and, you know, just kind of taking the community to that next step. So this is just the logical expansion to that. And I think we're going to be providing some really cool content for those different tiers. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, me too, definitely. And, you know, also thanks goes out to the whole update team for aiding in this endeavor. And, you know, I had a few ideas of what we could do for the various tiers and the benefits and whatnot, but it was actually you guys, part of the team here, who helped flesh this whole thing out and get it off the ground. So, all right, so what do we got for achievements this week?
All right, so this week we do have some achievements, and we're going to start with Seabreeze 24. Got 99 woodcutting on June 6th. That's my birthday. Good day. And then we had Annexthea Morris with 99 range June 4th. Hopefully that was the right name. Sorry if I mispronounced it. And Cena ATN with 99 Slayer on June 4th. And then we have Touchpad Pro with 120 Constitution. Great. And that was on June 3rd.
Nicely done. All right. So continuing this list, we have Desmo360 with 99 Runecrafting on June 2nd. Vigarian Bard with 99 Farming on May 31st. XOX Scotty XOX with 120 Invention also on the 31st. And continuing on the 31st, Wiley with 99 Woodcutting and Jade Gizmo with 99 Herblore. Congratulations, everyone.
Very nice. Very nice.
Woo-wee. Nice achievements. All right. What do you got for pick of the week?
This week, I have a game that it's pretty fresh. I think it's only been out for about a week. And it's for all the players out there that are into, like, that single-player, story-driven experience. This is not your multiplayer Call of Duty-style game. This is story-driven. It's really cool, and it's called Vampire. It's a small studio. And it has some roughness on the edges, but this is what is so cool about this vampire game, right? It is set in 1918 London. Yeah, 1918 London. You are a returning, you're returning from the front. You were a surgeon in the war. During that experience,
I can see where this is going.
Are turned into a vampire, obviously. But now you're back in London, and guess what's going on in London at this time? That's right, Spanish flu. So there's sick people everywhere, and they need doctors. But how are you going to treat them? Are you going to heal them, or are you going to kill them? And that is the dilemma for you. It is possible to finish this game without killing a single...
There's a guy giving a vampire bite to someone on the trailer here.
But it's like it really engages you in these moral dilemmas, and they actually have real game consequences like later on in the game. Say, you know, if you choose to kill an NPC early, they might not be there for side quests later on. and that's really interesting. And here's the real dilemma. You have to the way to gain experience the most, you know, effective way is to feed on people. That's how you.
So you're the vampire.
Yeah, you're the vampire. And will you become more powerful by feeding on others, or do you try to stick to your doctor's oath and only heal others and try to be very choosy with who you have to feed on? And like I said, keep in mind that these NPCs, you learn their stories and you get involved in their lives. And the more you get involved, the more XP you get if you end up killing them. So,
what if you kill like someone who is hunting the vampires, like a priest, for example?
There are narratives that will deal with that sort of thing. Like I said, there are people that you can't wait to kill, and there are people that you're going to be really reluctant to. But I don't want to give away too much just because it is such a story-driven game. It's a semi-open world, so there's some linear parts, but there's also a lot of exploration, especially when it comes to the story and the different NPCs. Some of those NPCs are people that traditionally hunt vampires. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really clever game. Yeah. That's kind of what I thought of too. Yeah.
All right. So that's Vampyr. You can find it on Steam. Vampyr. That is a bit of a different spelling. So.
Yeah, it is. And you'll hear people say like Vampyr, different stuff like that. I will tell you now that they are, I think it's $49.99. And if you wait a couple weeks, that might be on sale.
Summer the Steam sale
will be coming. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like I said, this isn't a AAA title, so it doesn't have like the really nice polish, but it's a really good game. So
Yeah. All right. What have you been up to on RS? I assume you haven't been sucking the blood of people there.
I have not been in Mauritania. We're done with those. Actually, I've been doing a few dailies here and there for the crafting, playing some harps, but mostly been down here on the incandescence. Just, I'm trying to make money. I'm trying to get my Nox bow back. Then I will have my set. So that's really what I've been focusing on.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. As for me this week, I did, some clue scrolls. I had a good run. I didn't have a hard clue scroll that was less than 500K, believe it or not, which is amazing. I think I went for a streak of four. They were around 450 to 550K. So that was good. I also, picked up my, scythe and continued on the Slayer journey and, got my first soul of Abyssal Demon. So of course nice. Need a lot more of those to populate the dungeon down there. Cause I think that's what you want to, fill it with. I currently have the task of, Adamant Dragons.
Okay. That's not a bad task.
Yeah. I got to relook up how to do those. But
range,
Yeah, definitely. Bane arrows,
just range
right?
them and you're good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought.
I mean, you don't have to. I don't think you have to have Bane for Adamant, but, I mean, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, the less food you use, the more profit that comes from it at the end of the day.
Exactly.
So I've been doing that, and I've just been utterly amazed at the amount of clue scrolls that come out of Abyssal Demons. You know, one task of 250, I got five of them.
Oh, wow. Were you wearing a Luck of the Dwarves or
yes.
something? Okay, nice.
I do.
Nice.
I always wear that, just in case, you know?
Yeah, me too. You never know.
Yeah. But, so that, and, you know, aside from that, just did a little bit of divination gathering when I was preparing the show and whatnot, just to have a bit of a relaxed session so I wouldn't end up killing myself doing anything, so... But yeah, doing Slayer and, you know, I honestly feel like with Slayer, I can, doing it for invention primarily and money making. But as it is right now, just look at the price of, you know, mud runes or dust runes. And, you know, those are absolutely absurd in the amount of GP they can bring in. So, I mean, there are other options as well. But I think at the end of the day, you know, it's just good to do a bit of Slayer and get that invention level up to 99 and, you know, eventually get it to 101, I think, for the Divine-O-Matic.
Oh, yeah. And Slayer's fun, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah. We'll have a talk at some point on the show about my preferred Slayer tasks. I'm still working that out. I want to provide my own perspective on it. I haven't not done it since a number of years ago. So, but.
Well, that'll be interesting. Can't
yeah.
wait.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you, Tanis, once again, as always.
Well, thank you.
And if you guys want to visit us in-game, you can find us in-game in our friends chat at Bits Bytes. We're also on Twitter at RSBNB. And, of course, we do have the full show notes available at update.rsbnb.com. And, of course, the new RSBNB Update Patreon at patreon.com/RSBNB. So with that being said, we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
Take care.